the All Things XR podcast. Where you can get the best AR/VR analyzers from the biggest names in the field. Hi everyone, welcome to the All Things XR podcast. I'm Mujtaba. In today's episode, we talk about the current state and the future of AR and VR with our special guest, Charlie Fink. Charlie is a writer, producer, and futurist, and also has a column in Forbes about AR and VR. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks, sure. So, Charlie, can you tell us more about yourself and what you do?
Sure. Well, primarily, I work as a consultant and a professional speaker and a columnist, as you said, for Forbes and contributing editor to Virtual Reality Pop, which is a Medium publication. And I'm the author of Charlie Fink's Metaverse, an AR-enabled guide to VR and AR, which is available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. Uh-huh. That book was published on January 1st, and it's the Bible of AR and VR, but it also contains a lot of AR. So the book is an object which is, you might say, covered with data, uh-huh, which is served for most locations and objects in the world. It's sold. It certainly exceeded my expectations to the point that I'm working on a new book, which will be exclusively about the many modes of augmented reality.
That's great. So the book has an app, and readers can use the app to experience augmented reality right on the book, right?
That's right. And you can, if you want to see how it works, you can go to my website, thinkmetaverse.com, and you can try out the AR right there.
Uh-huh, great. So we will surely put links on the description of this podcast. So Charlie, I believe that 2017-2018 were golden years in AR. I started working on AR about 7 years ago, and I haven't seen such traction to the field till yet. But do you think that it is early on AR/VR, or for starting the next Google, Apple, or Facebook, the time is now?
Well, first of all, we have to separate AR and VR, because they are very, very different things. AR is a tool to augment man in the same way that having access to Google on my smartphone gives me a better memory. It's augmenting me. So augmented reality is the process. It's the path to invisible computing and ubiquitous computing. And it's really about the evolution of man. And it has many, many modes, and it's going to seep into more and more corners of our lives and the apps that we use every day. VR, on the other hand, has its roots. You know, its goal is the willing suspension of disbelief to be present in another reality. It's a fully occluded device, so it's not augmenting anything. It is a world in itself. Mm-hmm. And it's very good for simulation, great for training pilots, and other kinds of workers who have to deal with complex equipment. And this way, of course, they don't have to train on the actual equipment. So you have pilots and even UPS drivers who are using virtual reality to simulate the things that they will be doing in the real world. Surgeons use it for surgical simulation. Mm-hmm. There's a great company called Oso VR that actually allows surgeons to do orthopedic surgery with real instruments on a virtual patient. So virtual reality has some wonderful enterprise uses. I think we'll see it more and more in classrooms and libraries and museums. And certainly it's got great entertainment applications in public spaces. Free Roam VR, which lets you walk around in a movie, is really quite amazing. But so its purpose is different than augmentation, right? Its purpose is transportation.
Yeah.
So AR is a new tool for man, but VR is part of our quest for immersion that started with cave paintings and Plato's cave and theater and movies and TV and video games and anything that requires our willing suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. That is what VR is part of. That's a continuum that has existed since the beginning of time. AR is a different thing. Also, by the way, part of man's history and technology, mm-hmm. The club augmented man.
Yeah.
The car, the jet, all of our inventions are to augment us, to make us better, to make us faster, to make us more productive.
Exactly.
And now AR has developed to the point where you know, we can wear it. It can be augmenting us at all times. So that is quite an extraordinary watershed moment in the evolution of mankind, which, by the way, just to sort of reflect on one mind-blowing statistic, is that, you know, 10 generations ago, you know, our great-great-grandparents lived with the same kind of technology that man had lived with for 1,500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Things like sail power and horse power. You know, that's how man had lived for millennia.
Yeah.
But now what happened in 10 generations, and these 10 generations, as opposed to the 250,000 generations that came before them, have represented the evolution of man. And we have augmented ourselves with technology and ultimately computer technology and ultimately wearable technology. And the purpose of this is, of course, to better connect us with the things that we care about. Mm-hmm. And I might add the people we care about.
Yeah, exactly. But so, but Charlie, do you think that it is early to take AR, VR seriously, or it is the time, actually?
It depends who the audience is. Mm-hmm. For consumers, I think that there isn't a lot right now. I think they will see more and more VR in public places and more VRcades, which are more like the internet cafes that used to pop up and actually still exist in certain parts of the world where people afford computers or bandwidth. So, you know, VR will seep into people's lives in that way. You know, the home penetration of VR continues to be challenging. And I think that's partly because people don't understand what it's for. It has no readily apparent consumer value proposition, much like the personal computer in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It was the internet that made the personal computer ubiquitous. So what I like to say is VR is waiting for its AOL moment.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's waiting for online services so that people can see what it has to offer. You and I know what it has to offer,
mm-hmm.
but mass market does not. You know, keep in mind, you know, the Oculus Go, which may be the most successful VR product introduction since the PlayStation VR, is only going to sell 1.5 million units this year, whereas they sold 12,000 Nintendo Switches in 3 weeks last December.
Yeah.
So lest we get overly excited, you know, yes, it is very, very early. And of course, you know, that has a cascading effect into the ecosystem so that it hurts developers who have to raise money and they have to decide what platforms they want to develop for. So that's why Oculus has been so aggressive seeding the ecosystem with production funding.
Mm-hmm.
And it is resulting in honestly some great programming for the Oculus store. So that's sort of the Netflix strategy.
Yeah. But how about AR?
Well, AR is not early if you're in enterprise. You know, that there's the HoloLens, Google Glass 2.0. There's terrific micro displays made by companies like Kopin. And these are all tools that help workers accomplish tasks more efficiently.
Yeah.
Right, but like a jet fighter's AR-equipped helmet, you take it off as soon as the job it was built for is completed.
Uh-huh. So right now you see more potential in enterprise, right?
Yes, there's big potential in enterprise in the near term, and it has the potential to save certain kinds of enterprises like manufacturing, anything that requires electronic handwork, to be done much better and faster. with fewer errors.
Uh-huh. So you don't see any killer apps in AR in near future?
Well, again, I do think there are AR killer apps, and I think they're happening right now. I mean, AR has a killer app for social media.
Uh-huh.
Gamification of content is a killer app. But all these things are going to be used in conjunction with different apps, right? So it's not like Google Maps is now utilizing AR. It's like, oh, man, local directions on Google Maps are awesome. You know, have you ever chased the fox?
Uh-huh.
And the fact that it's AR, it's really... Who cares that it's AR?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see. So you see it more beneficial as a feature than being the core of the application.
Well, again, for an enterprise application, it's not a feature. It is, it is the function.
Yeah.
But in terms of mobile, handheld, augmented reality for consumers, yes, it's a feature.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Charlie, Magic Leap started shipping its version of its goggles. What do you think about that? Have you tried them yet?
I have handled it and looked through it briefly in someone else's lab, mm-hmm. where I wasn't supposed to, and it felt very much like the HoloLens.
Uh-huh.
But until I have my, hands-on one, and I can see how things like email work and what is it good for? So I'll let you know. But I'm excited, and I have high expectations. But I know, on the other hand, it's more or less a developer version. Not surprised by the price tag. A little disappointed. I guess we're going to go like Tesla did, which is a few years of really premium devices that only rich people can understand afford. And ultimately, there'll be, version 3 where, there'll be $1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's pretty pricey, but so is the HoloLens.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see what it can do. I mean, I have to say that I find its styling a little comical. I don't like things that don't let me use my prescription. I guess that's a feature that they say is coming later.
Mm-hmm.
Hats off to Magic Leap. They have popularized some of the ideas of augmented reality, not any of the subtleties, and certainly not its many modes, but they're representing what an optical combiner can do very dramatically, which is great for all of us. I mean, somebody has to be the canary in the coal mine, right? Somebody has to educate the consumer about what this is. That's going to make it much easier for the ones who come next. They do have a first mover advantage, but the first mover advantage, is not always the most important success factor.
Exactly.
Technology. So, it's more form factors than that. So we'll see. Magic Leap has certainly made a leap ahead of everybody. I think Apple is at least 3 years away from a product. So they have an opportunity here to establish themselves with a few competitors, but it's hard for me to judge it without owning it, at least for a week.
Yeah, great. So from the demos I judge, I really didn't see that much of a special technology that we were promised from their teasers. And from parameters...
They didn't do themselves a lot of favors with the press. With many of their strategies, which were honestly targeting investors.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to hold that against them. I think that they could have handled PR differently and ended up in a very similar place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The truth is, I haven't used it. The demos that they showed weren't the greatest thing I've ever seen, and they certainly weren't anything like their videos, but hats off to them for at least being transparent and starting to talk in a serious way about what's really real.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a fan of Magic Leap until proven otherwise.
Me too.
It's too easy to criticize them. What they've done is incredibly hard. I mean, if this works, they've invented another Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, of course, it could all crash and burn and be another General Magic. We shall see.
Yeah, and from the parameters like field of view, I think they still have a long way to go.
I have always argued that field of view is going to be a real obstacle.
Uh-huh.
Consumer adoption, but I think there are some other subtleties to that, because I'm not sure that ultimately the optical display is going to be the point of augmented reality glasses. It may be the augmented reality glasses are really just the carrier of the universal visual browser and computer vision, and has on board an intelligent assistant that talks to you much more often than it puts graphics in front of your face. So I think we've all been operating on this assumption that, you know, AR is like VR and that its primary function is visual.
Mm-hmm.
But I am challenging that and saying its fundamental job is computer vision,
yeah,
not computerized objects in front of your eyes.
But that really affects the user experience if the field of view is limited. You know,
yes.
You experienced, yeah, HoloLens, absolutely, and the experience is not that much good.
Once you're using the word field of view with a consumer, you know, you have started an educational program which you can never finish.
Yeah, we both haven't tried Magic Leap, but comparing it to Microsoft HoloLens, which has 35 degrees of FOV, it is superior. But compared to Meta 2, which is 90 degrees, it is still behind, and FOV actually really, really matters in user experience. Do you think that Magic Leap can deliver its promises to revolutionize spatial computing and mixed reality?
Well, first of all, I mean, anybody who can get us looking up instead of down at the palm of our hands is going to be doing a great service for humankind.
Exactly, exactly.
That's the first thing. You know, but there are so many cuts at this, you know. I mean, what does typing look like? What does messaging look like? What is, you know, so supposedly you could persistently locate content.
Mm-hmm.
Magic Leap. What does that mean? What are the implications of that? What's it like to do work wearing Magic Leap? Right? Supposedly I get to see my text messages. It's all coming up in my field of view. I don't even know if I want that. Maybe I do, maybe I don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the UX, UI, and inputs are obstacles in AR, and the challenges we have to solve to get to something consumer friendly. In our previous episodes, we talked with Shel Israel, and he was talking about, and he was more optimistic about inputs like brain sensors to actually get inputs from your mind directly to your AR glasses. And I think if we reach to that point, it will be solved on some parts.
Maybe. Shell's a smart guy and he's seen a lot of things, so I would never question his judgment.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's going to take a long time, because it's not taking something we're already doing and making it better. It's taking something we're already doing and showing us a completely different way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is hard, right? Well, there's a lot of education there, a lot of selling, especially for an expensive device. Obviously, the strategy here is go after the first adopters hard, you know, and try and get 10,000 people to endorse it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, so exactly. I think, obviously, they're supposedly have built in a lot of, you know, great apps that demonstrate the potential of the ML1. So let's see them. I say that not facetiously in the least. Let's see them. I want to see them.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You know, there are a lot of developers who have been working with Magic Leap who have very nice things to say about it. So, you know, people who have been using it do not say negative things about it.
Yeah, exactly. And from the demos, and that's what we think, that smart people, actually, like investors from A16Z and other VCs, their minds were blown trying and experiencing Magic Leap. And from the demos, we get a little bit skeptical on them.
Yeah, because, you know,
what they've saw.
that was an attempt on their part to be transparent that, you know, was, in my opinion, overly criticized. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it was a valid criticism. I just didn't think it was that big of a deal. I think the bigger story was Magic Leap trying to be transparent. And you know, they are enthusiastic about what they're delivering to us. So I think that's genuine, and genuineness is what we have been missing from them. Mm-hmm. So I looked at it a completely different way. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, rock throwing guy is silly and it's not an app anybody would buy,
yeah.
But maybe it's in there to show something to developers, and we're not looking at it in the right way. You know, we're looking at it as a game unto itself. And I think that we may be jumping the gun and just, you know, people are ready to judge them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on social media, you know, there's no accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was surprised by that. But, I mean, it's part of the kind of antagonism they've engendered through their secrecy. I don't know, again, whether there would have been a different result, because people have high expectations based on who their partners are and how much money they raise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, Charlie, everyone in AR field are talking about AR cloud right now. What do you think about that, and who do you think will own it?
The answer is there will be hundreds of different AR clouds, mm-hmm. and they will all be tied to specific apps. So I'm sure all the social media sites will have some form of persistent geolocation. So it's pictures of food anchored in the place where they were taken, uh-huh. for example.
That's interesting.
And that will, you know, where does that content live? Right? It lives in a Facebook controlled cloud.
Uh-huh. So nothing like Oasis, where there's a central application, you go and you experience these AR and VR content?
No, but there will be central points.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, 6DAI could be a potential point, mm-hmm. that all the apps hit when they're using the AR, when they're using geolocation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. So it will be something like, for example, Facebook groups. You live on Facebook, but you have different communities, different contents on different
right.
categories.
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the key ideas behind, you know, visual augmented reality is that, you know, the universal visual browser and the computer vision have to be neutral and linked to every single app that you're running. You know, so again, and all of those apps are dragging content into the field of view through the optical system, and they are grabbing their content and data from different AR clouds.
Uh-huh.
But make no mistake, I mean, AWS is going to be the big winner in that game. So that's why I think probably social media, persistent geolocated posts like pictures of food probably will be time limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your post can be up for 6 months or whatever it is, because no one can take them. I mean, I know Facebook stores all your pictures and shit, but I don't know whether they're going to want to add to the object. I'd be surprised, but, you know, again, I mean, the scale of some of these companies is so large, the cost to them is really not much, even though the cost to individual companies and apps that use the technology might be high, because they have to pay somebody for hosting.
Uh-huh, yeah, AWS will be certainly among the winners. So, Charlie, in recent years, big players like Apple and Google showed interest in AR, and they have absolutely saw the big potential for it. What do you think about that, and how do you see the new era? Will they remain the biggest players in this new field, or there's a chance that some new company, like Magic Leap, for example, becomes the next Apple?
Well, I mean, no, because Apple makes the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they want the iPhone to have great apps. And, you know, AR is a great app. Mm-hmm. And they will probably use AR in their own apps, like Apple Maps, which, you know, they're taking another swipe at, having kind of whiffed the first time. And that will no doubt be AR-enabled. So Apple, you know, they introduced ARKit, which, you know, made most of their recent phones able to detect planes, mm-hmm. and death, and communicate that to apps. So that has set off, a lot of the mobile, that set off the mobile AR era, even though other people were doing it. Apple, because at any given moment they can, take 300,000 phones and turn them into AR phones.
Mm-hmm.
No friction at all, because they control the ecosystem and they control the platform. So that's why a lot of people say Apple has already won. So I think certainly Apple is going to be hard to beat. In terms of Google, we're really talking about the Android platform. But the Android platform and the iOS, Apple operating system, are continue to be very close competitors, and Android is catching up.
Yeah, and do you think that in AR it will be the same?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Great. So how do you think AR startups should change their strategy now that these big players are in the market?
I think that if you have an AR company that does persistent geolocation, cross-platform objects, you've got to get people to use your SDK.
Uh-huh.
And developers are going to be out there looking at everybody's SDK, software development kit, and figuring out which one is the best for what they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
What they know the job they have to do. They're looking for a tool to accomplish it. So that is, in every one of those developers, whether it's Ubiquiti 6 or UAR or Solario or, Dent Reality,
mm-hmm.
Name a few, you're going to have to get a lot of people using your SDK, and you're going to have to get some larger companies to use it. Otherwise, your method and your company may not survive. But then you've got a company like Xperial, which is doing persistent geolocation, but their bread and butter is sports teams and doing this inside of stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fine business. So there may be a lot of companies and a lot of different methodologies that coexist, that do essentially the same job, right? Niantic is going to have its own technology to do this job, right? Everybody's seen the demo of the Pokemon running around people's feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Fully, occluded and all that happening in real time. So that's clearly, going to happen in the future. But it may not just be one method of doing it. In the same way that all these different apps are going to have their own AR cloud, it may be they're all using different methods of geolocation.
Yeah, I agree. But, regarding big companies, I knew there were a few startups working on multi-user AR, and Apple and Google suddenly introduced their own versions of multi-user AR, and these companies were in trouble overnight. What do you think about that?
Well, I think everybody is at risk of being disrupted by a large company that moves into their segment. But more often than not, the large company acquires a small company that has a strong position in the segment and then is able to add its clout to further elevating its influence.
Yeah, that's also possible. So regarding these big companies like Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Snapchat, how do you weigh them? Which one do you think has the best chance?
I think they're all going to do fine with the AR cloud. I think they're all, in terms of not just the AR cloud, persistent geolocation, the placement of those the anchoring of those objects, the the real time cross platform persistence. I think people are going to have different methods of doing that. Certainly, Apple, as the premier platform owner, has control over AR, over its platform, and will use it to improve the products and services people are already using that they love.
Mm-hmm.
I think see Google doing similar things with its apps. Long term, Google has a lot of different plays, including Google Glass and an investment in Magic Leap. So I think Google is, Google Ventures is running around investing in a lot of startups, particularly in this space. So they obviously think it's important, and they're going to make Android point phones more and more AR ready. So all those companies are going to do just fine. Microsoft is very focused on the HoloLens. They're very focused on enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Microsoft is a great company. I don't think, are they positioned, do they have a position like Apple? No, they don't have a position like Apple. Apple, you know, there's no Microsoft, you know, mobile platform.
Mm-hmm.
They tried this phone and then they lost their nerve.
Yeah, exactly. So, Charlie, right now, there are no wearables for average consumers, and most AR glasses are targeted either to creators or enterprise businesses. But mobile AR has progressed really good in the last year, thanks to AR Core and AR Kit. How do you analyze mobile AR? Do you think that we can have an AR killer app in our mobile phones, or we have to wait till we have consumer AR glasses?
No, I think that we will. The computer vision and 3D capability of mobile phones is going to be part of its next generation. But the mobile upgrade cycle is slow.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we have to have the contents on mobile AR and then switch to wearables.
Yes, I mean, look, at some point we're going to need the universal visual browser, and there is no question in my mind that that's going to first appear in mobile.
Mm-hmm. So we can have that before wearables.
Yes, we will have that. We will have that before wearables, but it will be a strong indication of where wearables are going to go.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your vision? What year do you estimate that we will have something like that?
A universal visual browser within the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it's as hard of an engineering problem. I just don't know why no one has developed it. That's odd. And if someone had developed it, why aren't they evangelizing it? So it's just odd. It may be tied to computer vision because there are a lot of different methods for computer vision, and you really need to settle on a standard.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the lack of standards is holding it back. I don't know. I'm actually going to write about that in my new book. I think that's a really super interesting topic. Maybe I'll introduce my own version of the universal browser in my book.
That would be great. Well, Charlie, thanks very much for joining the All Things XR podcast.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.